And we're very happy to be joined here by telephone by Jody Allen Crowe. And Jody is a longtime educator. He's been a principal. He's been an elementary teacher. He's worked in many different teaching facilities, from charter schools to Indian reservations to just the general schools. And he's also the founder of Healthy Brains for Children. Jody, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you here. You came to our attention, really, when we found an article in the New York Times, and actually it was about an unusual dispenser to be found in a bar in Mankato. Maybe you can fill us in a little bit about how that came about and what it was.
Well, actually, it is an unusual thing to find in a bar. It's a pregnancy test dispenser. And that's an idea that it's been percolating around in my brain for about 3 or 4 years after my book came out, and I would speak to people, and I kept wanting to move past just, you know, posters and awareness types of things to something that really actually had some sort of action to it. And and I kept, you know, kind of challenging people. You know, why can't we, in order to prevent prenatal exposure to alcohol, why can't we put pregnancy test dispensers in the women's restrooms and bars? And finally, I just decided I'm going to do it. And lo and behold, it's been an amazing story since July 19th when we had the launch.
And of course, what we're talking about really is the effects of fetal alcoholism as a result of pregnant women who drink to excess.
Yeah, it's not even to excess, and that's the kind of the untold story. It doesn't take much alcohol, especially early on in the pregnancy, to do damage to the embryo, and that damage can start at about 18 days of a pregnancy. And there's so many women that have unexpected pregnancies, and after, you know, I'd go around, I'd speak, and I'd have women come up saying, "Oh, you know, I did drink when I was pregnant. I didn't even know I was pregnant, and I went out and I had a, you know, party with my girlfriends, and you know, a week later I find out I'm pregnant." And so there's many, many stories like that. And then there's so much, you know, anxiety about, you know, did the drinking, you know, cause any damage? And a lot of that damage doesn't actually show up in the newborn. You don't see the damage until you get into the more complicated brain function when a child is in school. So you're getting into first, second, third grade, and I've seen plateaus of kids as they go up, and they're beautiful children. They look just like any other child, but the brain damage that occurs early on in the pregnancy and all through the pregnancy damages the brain, and that's what we're all about. We're just trying to prevent that and give children a good, healthy brain for their life.
Now, you've had a lot of experience as a teacher to have a practical viewpoint about what's happened here, a lot of knowledge about how to spot that in children. Maybe you can give us a little bit about your background and how come it has become such a focal point in your life now.
I began my education, my career in education, working as a student teacher on the Leech Lake Reservation at the Bukkinagishik School. I thoroughly enjoyed the challenge. I then was asked to then become a teacher there. So I started my educational career working in the upper elementary classrooms in the Bukkinagishik School. After about, you know, my wife could tell you stories of me coming home with, you know, my glasses broken, my nose bloodied, my shirt's ripped, the violent behaviors of these early adolescent boys. And I didn't understand what was going on. And one day a nurse came to our school and told us about fetal alcohol syndrome. And I realized that I was working in a classroom that had the majority of my children in the classroom were struggling with the damage that had occurred prior to them being born. And so I just started studying the research on prenatal exposure to alcohol. So I've been actively studying the research ever since the late 1980s. And then I was redesigning classrooms, and then as I became principal and superintendent, redesigning entire programs in schools to fit the needs of kids who had brain damage from prenatal exposure to alcohol. So that's my educational background that gave me this. But I also, my hometown of Grand Rapids, Minnesota, had a school, the very first school shooter in the nation in 1966. And I remember that day very clearly. My brother was in the junior high. I was in the elementary. I remember all the stories coming into our classroom from what was happening. But as I worked in the schools as a principal, I had guns that came into the school, and I realized that I was seeing kids that were heavily prenatally exposed to alcohol doing these very illogical things like bringing guns to school. And then when the Red Lake school shooting occurred in 2005, I realized that there must be something to this. I went back to my hometown, studied the background of the school shooter, found out his mother was a very heavy alcoholic, and he fit the absolute profile of fetal alcohol syndrome with facial manifestations, body manifestations of damage, and of course, the behavioral damage. And I wrote a book called The Fatal Link, which was really what the catalyst to having me start the Healthy Brains for Children and work on preventing prenatal exposure to alcohol.
So two major things that it occurred in your life. One, of course, being exposed to children who have been damaged, but also being exposed to a shooting, which is a very traumatic event in high school or elementary place, tied together. It's amazing how they tied together in your mind, and you were able to put these things together and then research it, because you looked at other school shootings as well.
Yes, I looked at the school shootings across Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I've actually sat down with one of the mothers of the school shooter, talked to her quite extensively about her drinking when she was pregnant, had phone conversations, had communications. I've talked to very close relatives of mothers who, of the school shooters, irrefutable evidence of heavy prenatal exposure to alcohol in four out of the six school shootings in Minnesota, Wisconsin. The other two fit the profile, but in one case, I didn't have the resources to go to another state where the baby was, where the child was born. And the other one, the mother said she didn't drink, but when I challenged that statement by citing some evidence of that other people had told me about her, she had to change her statement and basically kind of back off of saying she didn't drink. So I just leave it in my book as that. I don't make a judgment. But the other, you know, there was one more, you know, some people may consider it a coincidence, but when I graduated from high school in 1974, I was awarded the Forrest L. Wiley Award. Forrest Wiley was the man who was killed in the school shooting in 1966. And he was an administrator at the school, and I didn't realize how much that would impact me until later on in my life. And every time I had a gun come into my school, I would think back to Forrest Wiley, and you know, and it seemed like there's been a full circle here of me coming back and saying, "Can I help?" And I've actually had many conversations with his family, with other other school shooters, victims' families, in this whole journey. As I learned this, so yeah, it's been quite an experience.
Now, what had you done to win that award?
It was an award that was voted on by the students of my class, and we had a graduating class of about 400 in Grand Rapids, and there were three of us that won the award. It was considered a good citizenship award.
Okay, sure. What as a teacher and an administrator of schools, what things did you find you could change to help young people who suffered from this tragic problem?
Well, we really needed to change how we as adults viewed the child, because so many times we see those behaviors and we think it's willful disobedience. So we tend to use the typical school system of discipline, which in many cases has some form of punishment to it. And, you know, like timeout or, you know, you're going to suspend it from school, or as they get older, using, you know, some kind of a tiered type of a discipline system. And I realized that many times I was actually punishing brain damage behavior And punishing brain damaged behavior does not change the behavior. So we really worked on developing a system where all of our staff changed how we talk to kids. And when we saw a behavior, instead of using some sort of a chastisement, we would use a question to give the brain a chance to reset and rethink. So it's in many ways, it's a, like a redirection type of a strategy. But we used it all the way through high school. It was amazing how it changed the whole environment of the school. And that was one way. The other way is, you know, computers never get angry with children, where adults, when you have to reteach and reteach and reteach, even some things that should be memorized, after a while, the adults are going, why aren't you learning? I just told you this yesterday. And we really trained our staff to say, to look at how do we provide the tools for the kids to who have to redo things many times. We need to provide tools to the teachers and for the kids. So we brought in a lot of computer-assisted instruction. You know, a computer just doesn't get angry with a child if it if the child has to do something three or four or five or ten times in order for them to set it into memory. So we really worked on looking at kids who were not doing well as how do we provide the tools so that they can continue to practice what they need to know. And then be careful about what we're moving them to, you know, in the sequential curriculum. Sometimes you leave all these gaps, and the kids just get further and further behind. So we wanted to make sure that we had the right tools so that we were having the kids work on what they needed to know and making sure they had plenty of time to practice. And another thing that we did, we realized, and if you talk to adoptive parents of children who've been brain damaged from prenatal exposure to alcohol, almost unanimously, they're going to say, please don't send homework home, because the brains are so stressed during the day trying to manage within an environment that has so much stimuli that when they get home and then they have more homework put out in front of them, many of these kids would just have meltdowns at home. And time after time after time, I've had parents tell me that their kids would come home, they'd put the homework in front, and there'd be a meltdown. And if you understand the damage from prenatal exposure to alcohol, the brain gets so stressed in environments where there's a lot of stimuli. So the other thing that we also did was we were careful about how we set up our classroom so that we didn't have a lot of stimuli around the kids. Because when you have a brain that is highly impulsive, that brain is going to be it's going to be focused on anything that catches their attention, any type of noise, any type of color in their room. So we literally, in elementary, middle school, and high school, had quiet rooms where the kids could go when the stress was so much in their brain. They could go in there where there's just nothing around them and just sit and work. And many of the kids literally wanted to be in there rather than to be in the classroom, because the impulse of the stimuli around them was causing so much stress in their brain. And that, you know, so we really looked at what the research showed us and tried to design our schools in a way that most worked for those kids.
Is this kind of behavior something that you have to talk to, or somebody has to talk to the young people who are plagued by this problem, so they understand their own behavior and are able to make modifications themselves?
It is done in the schools where people understand it, but there's so few schools that understand it, so few educators who really understand how much this is impacting the entire classroom, and there's so much guilt involved in talking about this when they're you know, talking to especially biological parents. The ones who talk about it are the adoptive parents. And, you know, unfortunately, in my work with probably close to hundreds, if not thousands, of adoptive parents, almost all of them say they struggle with professionals, teachers, and social workers to get them to understand that their child, who looks like a very normal child, is struggling with brain damage from prenatal exposure to alcohol. Mm-hmm. And many times when those behaviors occur, the adults who are working with them start to look at the parents and say, why don't you do what you're supposed to do? And instead of understanding that they're seeing brain damage behavior. So it's really a difficult subject on all ends of things until we really clearly understand how much this is impacting our schools.
We're speaking with Jody Allen Crowe, and he's an educator and founder of the nonprofit Healthy Brains for Children, also author of a book called The Fatal Link. Jody, I, as I read the article in the New York Times, I noticed that they cited the Centers for Disease Control, a survey that indicates 1 in 13 pregnant women reported consuming alcohol, and of those 1 in 13, nearly 1 in 5 admitted, binge drinking during that time, which means they've had four more drinks right in a row. It appears to be a larger problem than most of the public would realize.
I'll point out one or a couple of words in that study.
Mm-hmm.
Self-reported. Now, self-reporting is highly unreliable. I will tell you.
You mean indicated by, because it was a survey? Is that what you're saying?
Right, right. I'll tell you, in all of my work, I'm going to make a statement that shocks people. I'm going to say that 40% of the kids who come to our school are prenatally exposed to alcohol at some level. And 20% of the kids who are in our school system are exhibiting evidence of brain damage from prenatal exposure to alcohol. When I started talking about this, I was out in Fargo, and I mentioned my estimation was 30% of kids were prenatal exposed to alcohol. And the newspaper reporter, this was a couple of years ago, didn't believe me. So she called Dr. Larry Bird out of the University of North Dakota, who's been studying this for 30 years. And Dr. Larry Bird said, no, Crow's wrong. It's 40%. And I don't doubt that. Dr. Ira Chasnoff out of the University of Illinois, who runs the Children's Research Triangle, has been doing a study in the Big Island of Hawaii over the last 3 years. And on the Big Island of Hawaii, 49% of the babies born in the last 3 years have been prenatally exposed to alcohol. We have a problem that we're really not talking about. The CDC talks about self-reported evidence. And when the studies have been done on self-reporting, when there was one done a couple of years ago where they did a survey. It was a handwritten survey. Then they took a hair sample of the women. In the survey, about 9% were saying that they were drinking any alcohol. When they took the hair sample, it was up around 28% were drinking alcohol.
Sure.
And the ones that were drinking,
so you're
were
feeling
not reported.
You're feeling that it's very underreported, essentially.
Absolutely.
Is what you're saying. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I only interrupted you because we only have so much time, and
okay,
I have a couple of other things I needed to get at here. But
sure.
As far as let's get back to the dispensers, and apparently I'm assuming that was your idea. And
yes,
you were able to you were able to bring it to fruition, and it seems to be well received in Mankato. Have you got? I imagine that you have ideas of not only going to other bars, but going to other places where people might be able to use it.
Absolutely, we're looking. Our next we're going to be working with some bars. Our next launch will be up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. We're hoping around the middle of October. But we're also working with universities. I'm meeting with North Dakota State University on Monday, and Minnesota State University in Mankato has expressed interest in having us place the dispensers in the student unions, because we really have a large population of college students who, you know, all the studies show there's a great, you know, the women are drinking at the level of men now. And there's a lot of sexual activity. So you combine those two, and that's where we want to have the pregnancy test dispenser available.
Sure.
For women. So, and then, of course, gas stations and fitness centers and that sort of thing, eventually we'd like to get in those areas.
Well, it's sure something that it caught everybody's attention, because it is an unusual place to begin. But by catching everybody's attention, it probably works very well for what you intend to do. And if people want to learn more about what you're doing, about your organization, and also about your book, have you got a website they can go to? Or
Yes.
Go ahead.
HealthyBrainsForChildren.org. You can find out about a pregnancy test dispenser project. You can find out about my book, about what we've been doing as Healthy Brains for Children. In fact, we were up in Thunder Bay in June, and we founded the Rotary Clubs up in that area have sponsored the start of a chapter of Healthy Brains for Children, the first in Canada.
Sure.
Up in Thunder Bay.
That sounds great. Jody, I'm afraid that we're out of time, but it was sure fun to not only fun, but informative to talk to you, learn about this problem, and now folks have a place to go to and learn more. I want to thank you so much for giving us your time on a Friday night.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Jody. Jody Crowe.
All right.